Hello, Marvelites! You are listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 472. I'm Ryan Panagos, a.k.a. Agent M.
And I'm Lorraine Sink.
And this is Jason Eichelhart, a.k.a. JMI.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Los three amigos back together again!
The three, oh! Yes!
Oh, man. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Wild times in the universe, man.
I mean, wild times, man. It's like the old West out there, dude.
This is also the episode releasing on Friday the 13th. If anybody missed our scary stories from Halloween episode from 2 weeks ago, go check it out. That's episode number 470, where we read some cool old Marvel stories.
That was really fun, though. I really enjoyed getting to read those.
Those were good. Those were fun.
As we're getting into like the holiday season, do you guys like scary holiday stories as well? Like I like stuff like the really bad B movie Jack Frost from the mid 90s. <All right.
laughs> Get at me. You know that I do, but that's because I would extend Halloween all year long.
I do, but I love going back to the there's something about going back to the 1980s horror films, you know, going back to the Friday the 13th, going back to the Nightmare on Elm Street. Those are fun because you realize how bad they are, but yet the story still holds up, but it's the technology that doesn't.
You know what? You know what I need to watch? I need to bridge this gap. I've never watched Krampus before, and I feel like
Krampus
that's...
rules.
Oh, I need to watch that.
All right. James and I are going to watch Krampus. We'll report back.
Okay. I own the Waxwork vinyl soundtracks to that. It's so good. Mike, the director, did Godzilla, so like real good. My friend Todd was one of the writers on Krampus, so definitely check Krampus out. It's really good. One other piece of movie homework for all of us, the 1980s version of Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is...
Oh,
is it about farts?
Okay, if you're listening to this show, you want to hear about Marvel stuff, not about Lorraine's love of farts. We're going to talk about everything that's happening in Marvel this week, whether it's games, comics, movies, TV, what have you. And on top of it being Friday the 13th, this week is the release of Marvel, Spider-Man, Miles Morales. Yay! Woo!
And we asked a bunch of people, you know, last week, what were you most looking forward to coming to Marvel, Spider-Man, Miles Morales? And we got some responses, so we thought we'd kick it off with that. Since we're celebrating all week, and we're going to have more about Miles Morales coming up in the show.
Yeah. Damon Bosar on Facebook. Oh, also, shout out to our listeners who are jumping on Facebook and sending us messages.
Love
thank
that.
Thank you for those. It's great. Damon says, one thing I am looking forward to in Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales is all the new villains. Also, question for next week's guests. Does Insomniac Games have any creative input to the tie-in book for Miles Morales? The tie-in book is something we will be talking about a little bit later. It's called Wings of Fury. But, you know, that's a good question. I think, from my understanding, and I don't want to speak for Insomniac or Marvel Games or anyone, but it's my understanding that they are all working in concert to put all this cool stuff together, that the story that the writers from Insomniac and the creative team from Marvel Games, it's all like this wonderful, cool, big team that they build this universe together.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So this is from Bradley Tan, and he says, hey, Ryan and Lorraine, cheers and best wishes from Malaysia. I'm looking forward to playing the game as Miles Morales, as he was great in the first Spider-Man game. I've not read anything on the game story, as I want to be surprised as I play. But if storyline goes, I would probably look forward to one or two of Peter Parker's villains coming back to haunt New York and Miles, and has taken up the task of stepping into his new role as Spider-Man and to keep things in check. Hopefully, a cameo from Venom would be dope, too. But ultimately, I'm just looking forward to playing the game.
Yeah. The villains, I think that's interesting that both of those comments really, like, honed in on the villain aspect of the game and like, who fans are going to be able to play up against. I believe it's public that Rhino's in the game. I don't want to say anything more about the other characters in the game. But it's pretty rad. It's pretty, pretty cool.
Well, and, you know, speaking of all the cool stuff from the game, there are new Adidas sneakers that are inspired by the game, which is They're so sick. Have you seen them? They're like red and black. I love sneakers. I have so many pairs of sneakers. I like grew up in California in the 90s. Yep. And so there's just some part of me that's like a real sneakerhead. They've got sort of like web printing on the heel. And they've, of course, got like the classic Adidas stripes. And they have PlayStation and Spidey tags on the laces. They're super duper cute. They're going to release in Canada and the US and select markets in Asia on November 19th. So get in there. Oh, and also if you're in Europe, they're going to come out December 4th. So keep your eyes up on the blogs and stuff for updates because, you know, there's going to be a line. If you're in New York, there's going to be a line.
And the funny thing is I have tons of shoes and I looked at them and I was like, I should buy. And I looked over at my wife and she's looking at the computer. She's like, what are you looking at? You looking at shoes? You should just close your computer right now. Just close it now. I was like, yeah, but babe, these are the miles. No, close it now. So yeah. I don't think I get these.
Let's talk about some more Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales stuff, because as we mentioned, there's a prequel novel to the new game that is out now, and it is written by best-selling author Brittany Morris, who also wrote a book called Slay. And this one is super cool because it introduces one of my favorite new Spidey, I don't want to call her villains. She's a supporting character. Starling is in this prequel novel, which is really cool. She's a character who's been introduced in the Miles Morales comics that have been written by Saladin Ahmed. I'll read a little bit of the description here. It says, Wings of Fury picks up shortly before the events of Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, where Miles finds himself coming to terms with what it means to be Spider-Man, and a mix-up with the law leaves him questioning everything when people are ready to believe the worst in you. Also, Miles is dealing with moving to a new neighborhood. If you don't know, Miles is going to be in Harlem in this new game. The loss of his father, which if you missed the first game, that's a big whole part of that first game. Yep. And also acquiring his new superpowers. After the Vulture and his accomplice Starling unleash experimental tech on Marvel's New York, Miles must decide what kind of hero he wants to be. So we've been doing these kind of prequel novels and tie-in books for our big video game releases and, you know, for a while now. So this is super cool. Brittany Morris is going to crush it. So if you want to get out there and get it, it is called Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales Wings of Fury. We also have the soundtrack for Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales out now. I don't know if y'all have seen what's on this, but this is pretty cool. I'll tell you some of the details here, because the soundtrack is composed by John Paisano, who also composed songs for Marvel's Daredevil, Marvel's The Defenders, Marvel Spider-Man, the video game. It's got songs that are like names like Rhino Rampage, Spider Training, and New York's Only Spider-Man. Plus a brand new song from Jaden called I'm Ready. And also there are going to be two tracks from Lecrae, which will be released soon. You can listen to it now on Spotify and Apple Music, Pandora, iTunes, you know, wherever you get your music. And it's out from Hollywood Records.
Yeah. And I mean, there's just so much cool stuff around Miles Morales. You know, there's a whole reading list for Miles Morales, and there's a sale on Miles Morales comics on the Marvel Comics app. The reading list is on marvel.com. You can check it out. So really, there's about a bajillion ways you can get more Miles Morales content to sort of fill out your understanding and enjoyment of the game. So get into it.
And it's just as a fan, it's just really, really cool to see this, because as a kid, guys of color, we wanted to be Spider-Man, and like this, here it is. And it's just so inspiring that not only is he, you know, got a movie and got a comic, but to be in the video game, to like be him, quote unquote, this is gonna be fun.
It's pretty amazing.
Also, D23 Fantastic Worlds panels is coming up next week, and there are going to be some really cool Marvel panels that we want to keep you abreast of. First up is going to be Marvel's 616 Uncovered. That's going to be at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. It has executive producers Sarah Amos from our own office, as well as Jason Sturman, directors Clay Jeter and Brian Oakes, and they're going to talk about this new Disney Plus series. It's a really really delightful series. I hope that you guys will check it out on Disney Plus, because it really dives into some really, really awesome stuff in the Marvel Universe. There's some just really remarkable stories. They showcase sort of the intersection of storytelling and popular culture and fandom. There's just a bunch of really cool different kind of topics, from everything from sort of how a comic is made to cosplay to fandom. I mean, to women working in the industry. There's just like a ton of great stuff for you guys to check out. And there's also going to be Marvel Comics celebrates 80 years of Captain America. Wow. Can you believe? Doesn't he look great?
He looks
for
amazing.
80? That's going to be at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time with our own CB Sobolski, editor-in-chief, as well as executive editor Tom Brevoort, the vault of all things Marvel knowledge. And they're going to be talking about Cap's history in the comic books and pop culture and the big screen. And, you know, the creation of Captain America and how that character was made and his legacy is incredibly interesting. So I'm excited for people to check that out.
Yeah. Again, that's going to be on November 17th. You can go to d23.com/Fantastic Worlds Celebration. We also have a news article on Marvel.com with all that information, so you can check that out. All right. We are going to start getting into a little bit of fun comics announcements. James, what's this next? You just got this big old grin on your face. What do we got next?
I was like, I can't wait for James to talk.
Yeah.
just the announcement of Predator Omnibus coming in July. I mean, just, huh. I'm a big, huge Predator fan from Arnold Schwarzenegger to Danny Glover, all the way up to the new ones, you know, Predator versus all that. But this is about Predator. It's a huge collection of classic stories, many of the Dark Horse comics inspired by the movie. Nowhere is safe when the remorseless alien killer stalks the concrete jungle of New York City and leaves a trail of death across American Southwest and ignites the Cold War by landing in Siberia. I am so excited. There's something... one of the dopest characters ever created, just his whole, just the whole, the Predator's whole style, his weaponry, what he does, and just the whole backstory of why they come to our planet to do things. I just cannot wait. So in July, don't talk to me. I know what I'll be doing. I'll be just nose deep into Predator.
Yeah, you know, it's really cool. Like in July of this year, we announced that there would be some Alien and some Predator comics coming for 2021 as well. So go back, read all the original yes. comics about Predator, and then look out for cool stuff in the future, too.
Yeah, I'm super excited because I've never read any of these comics. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to diving into these and seeing what they're all about. And I think I texted you a Predator GIF the other day.
You did.
We were
you
just
did.
Texting about something. So, yeah, it's just in our bones.
I have a proposal for you guys. Mm. Come July, we're going to rewatch Alien and we're going to rewatch Predator and we're going to report back to each
yes.
other.
Ooh, yes. Yes. I'm in.
I haven't watched them since I was too little, so let's do this.
You got it.
How little were you?
I was... my parents didn't really censor me as a child, so I watched a lot of messed up stuff, and I was like, I can handle yeah. it, and then I have nightmares for weeks. They'd be like, if you think you can handle it, you're in charge of yourself, which was really great, but also I learned very quickly that I could traumatize myself.
But also made you into the cool lady you are today. I mean,
yeah,
you're
all
like,
that trauma makes you interesting. I mean,
you're,
yeah.
you're like, you are so cool.
It speaks volumes. All right, let's talk a little bit more about comics because over the next week or so, we're going to get lots more new comics news because comics releasing in February are starting to be announced this week. They're going to be announced next week. So this week, there was a really fun one, which is called X-Men Legends, where legendary X-Men writers return to classic eras of the mutant superheroes and all new in continuity stories set during their own groundbreaking runs. Folks that are going to be working on the series include Chris Claremont, Louis Simonson, Fabian Nicieza, Larry Hama, Peter David, and more. So get ready for that. The first issue, which is coming in February, is by Fabian Nicieza, and Brett Booth is actually going to talk about the third Summers brother. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. So next up, you guys, I know you're super duper pumped for this. A release date was announced for Marvel Studios' WandaVision.
Yes.
The new series is coming to Disney+. Look out for it January 15th on Disney+. The show looks so awesome. If you want right now, you can check it out on Marvel.com or you can check it out in Entertainment Weekly. But there was a really great article with Elizabeth Olsen, who plays Wanda, aka the Scarlet Witch, as well as Paul Bettany, who plays Vision, where they talked about their experience. And one of my favorite little tidbits from this article, you should really go read it because there's a ton of great stuff, but Elizabeth Olsen talks about how meta it was because it's filmed in sort of a television-y way, and it really reminded her of growing up on television sets because her sisters are the Olsen twins. And so she essentially was just saying, like, this reminds me of being on the set of Full House, which really tickled me.
That's amazing.
Like, very much.
Yeah. I am so looking forward. I'm so looking forward to this show. This looks so good because being a Marvel fan, for those of us that know the relationship between Vision and Wanda, and then to see what they did with the MCU and see what happened at the end. And it was, you know, there's that heartbreaking moment where everybody that's supposed to come back comes back and Vision doesn't. And we all know Wanda. We all know her powers, and we all know the books she's in, and the legendary book she's in. I'm so excited to see where they're going to take this, you know.
Oh, I was rewatching the end of Endgame just like a day or two ago. And there's that scene where she comes back to fight Thanos.
Yes.
And she's sort of like, you don't remember me, but you're gonna. And I was like, yeah.
You realize that she's, I didn't think about this. I don't know if this is going to have anything into play, but for the MCU moment, she's had two moments like that. Mm-hmm. Her brother dies and she goes after Ultron. And then her boyfriend dies and she goes after Thanos. So this girl's got some serious trauma when it comes to the men in her life. So,
but it makes her interesting.
That's what I'm saying. I can't wait.
The only thing I'll say about all this is if you're excited about the show, try to go in as fresh as you can.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Because like especially Lorraine and I, we know so much about it.
Yeah.
The show is going to be so freaking cool. If you're going to watch it, get hyped. Tell people to get ready for it. But, like, keep your mind clear of it.
Got it.
Just go in fresh.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. And then I think, like, once you watch the full series, mm-hmm. maybe we can suggest some comics that you should read to kind of fill out your knowledge and give you all those Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a plan. I'm with it.
All right. Let's get back into the Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales vibe of things, because our big interview this week is with the three head writers of the game, Evan Narcisse, Mary Kenny, and Ben Arfman. And man, this is a fun interview. And if you, similar to what we were just saying about WandaVision, if you don't know a lot about the game and you want to go in fresh, maybe listen to this afterwards. But if you're like, it's fine. We don't get into a lot of spoilers. No. We just get hyped and talk about the process and get excited. We do talk about Spider-Man the cat, though.
Yeah.
Ah.
Also, we talk a lot about the process of how video games are written, which I think is really, really interesting and you don't hear a lot about. So enjoy.
All right, Lorraine, I am so excited because this week we have on the head writers for Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales. I would like to welcome them to the show and introduce them right now. We've got Evan Narcisse. Hello, Evan.
What's up, Ryan?
Yeah. Mary Kenny. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
And Ben Arfman. Hello, Ben.
Hey, what's up?
Doing great.
So what are all of your origin stories with the game, with Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales?
Okay, so I joined Insomniac about 4 years ago, midway through the production of the first project, Marvel Spider-Man. So I was working on that and then transitioned as that project was closing out into pre-production on the Miles project. This was maybe 2.5 years ago when we just started kind of figuring out, okay, what is this game going to be? And it was pretty shortly after I got onto the project and Brian Horton, the creative director, got on, that we reached out to Evan, who was really the first name that we thought of in terms of someone we wanted to work with on the project. So then, Evan, now I pass the baton to you. You came on board.
Yeah, this was 2 years ago. So I was leaving my job at IO9, where I wrote about comics, video games, and nerd culture. I was wrapping up writing Rise of the Black Panther. And I got a call from out of the blue from somebody at Insomniac. And they were like, we wanted to talk to you about a project. And they said the world's Miles Morales. And I was basically in.
So then it was like me and Evan and Horton on it for a little while. But it very quickly was apparent that we needed more bodies on the project. We needed more talented writers than ourselves to make sure that we lived up to the standards. And that's when Mary got involved.
Yeah, so I came on almost 2 years ago. I came onto the project. They had already started, you know, testing some of the gameplay. They had some ideas about what they wanted the story to be. And I had finished playing the first Spider-Man game a week before I had my first phone interview. So, you know, it was just me trying to not fangirl all over John Paquette when I talked to him for the first time. But I did get the job. I came on board my first week was playing some of the first things they had kind of blocked out that were, you know, pretty rough at the time, but I already knew I was going to love it. The way that Miles swings through the city, just his different things he says during combat, I knew it was going to be a really special project. So I hopped in and we really dove into production and started figuring out the story we wanted to tell and making it really good.
Heck yeah. John Paquette is the writer for the first game, correct?
Yeah, so John was the lead on the first project. And I will say that at a certain point on this project, basically everybody who could hold a pen was doing work on it. So
yes,
John got involved at some point. Yeah.
I want to go back a little bit and ask, what are your actual Marvel origin stories, like actually becoming from awareness standpoint or fandom? Like, what hooked you and when was that for each of you becoming someone connected to Marvel? Mary, I'll start with you.
I came to Marvel a little later. It was actually with the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I'd never really read many comics and, you know, I hadn't been introduced to MCU yet, but I watched that movie and I was blown away. And that's when I really dove in and I started reading comics for the first time. I watched the MCU movies. What really hooked me about Marvel is the focus on character and how everybody feels so distinct and yet forms such a great cohesive unit. And that was kind of it. I dove in and I haven't really left since.
Awesome. I don't know about everybody else, but that first Guardians movie is crushes me every time.
Good.
I was raised by a single mom, so like there's a lot to it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. James Gunn, man. Yeah. Killed it with that one.
So good. Yeah. Ben, what about you?
I mean, I've been kind of a Marvel kid since about the time I can remember. Like the first pieces of literature I can remember reading was Spider-Man comics that we bought at a gas station driving between Colorado and Nebraska when I was a kid, like 5 or 6. And so like Spider-Man, Pete has always been my guy. And I think that's why I empathize with Miles so much, because we both grew up in a world where we were looking up at Peter Parker and kind of aspiring to be a hero like him. I've loved Miles since his debut. And when we got to work with him a little bit on the first project, but then we had this opportunity to really focus our storytelling on him, I mean, it's been an absolute blessing to be a part of this project.
Evan, how about you?
I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm the stereotypical, like, old comics nerd where, like, I learned to read on comics, you know, in my day, there were no superhero movies, you know? But yeah, like, I've always loved comics as a medium, as a storytelling form. And you can't say enough about how the Marvel evolution of superheroes as a genre was so important, which is that like there's real people inside these costumes and they have real problems just like the readers might. And Spider-Man was always the kind of exemplar of that approach. You know, Pete couldn't pay his rent sometimes. He had sour milk in his fridge. He was just a regular guy who having powers didn't help that much. It actually complicated his life. And it's great to see that core notional idea of Spider-Man live on through Miles. He has totally different problems, but he still has problems. And it's that kind of like relatability that's always made me a Marvel fan.
Now, I happen to know Evan pretty well at this point because I talk to him literally every day.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of Evan's history. And I know, Mary, you also have a history with journalism and nonfiction, just like Evan does. Has that affected how you guys work on games at all?
It's definitely affected what I focus on when I write. I am very detail oriented, and that's because as a journalist, to me, what was really not only getting all the details right, which you have to do, which I think really helps with inheriting a legacy like Marvel, where there are a lot of details to get right, but also taking time for the little moments, because that's what readers remember in journalism, and that's what players remember as well. You know, pausing outside of a building and there's a fog rising from the vents. Like that kind of stuff really grounds people in your story and in your game. And it's little stuff like that that I'm always trying to pitch in these stories, are those little human moments, because it's exactly the kind of thing that helps you connect with real people in journalism as well.
What about you, Evan?
Yeah, you know, part of your mandate as a journalist is to be the eyes and the ears for people who can't be in those spaces where you're at, right? You have to be a stand-in for an audience member or a fan, or, you know, and be like, okay, what would they want to know? What's an interesting detail that I can use to round out a story? And those same things apply to fiction writing. And I think writing for video games, that's particularly useful because you have to put yourself in the headspace of the player, right? And so that helps, you know, conceptualize the game world and the story, I think, in a really useful way.
And Ben, is there a way that you use your, you know, creative work in your past that really inspires you as you work on games?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So my background before coming to Insomniac was in film and TV. And I think that background has both helped me and hurt me in different ways working on video games, right? Like being a director, you have to interface with a lot of different people from different backgrounds, different crew positions, both in front of and behind the camera. And that level of artistic collaboration is just tenfold in video games. You have to get really comfortable speaking, you know, your art director's language, your sound designer's language, your actor's language. So that's really, really helpful. I think in the areas where it's hurt me or it's been a blind spot, it's been something that I have to focus on, film and TV is a passive medium and video games are interactive and you're really trying to put as many of your emotional beats on the stick as possible. And so I really have to fight against my urge to be like, oh, you know what we need for this moment? We need a close-up of Miles's face, feeling all these feelings, right? You want the player, and in this case, Miles, to be in the same headspace, and you want to make it feel as active as possible.
And I want to quickly shout out Najee Jeter, who plays Miles. Like, you really killed it.
Yeah, dude, Najee has brought so much heart to this project. Our cast is just exceptional, and there's so many times, whether it's in the booth or on the stage, or especially now that we've had to do things in this post-COVID world via Zoom remotely, where, I mean, they've just like, they've taken the material that we've provided and they've elevated it so much. And they're really the ones who take it to that place where you're laughing or crying or just reacting like a human to what's going on.
You know, to that point, do the three of you get to interact much with the voice cast, or do you get to go to the recordings or, you know, be a part of that? To you're nodding, Ben, which is great, which is seems like it's got to be fulfilling because there are so many people involved in the games. And sometimes you think, oh man, these lines are written 3 years, 2 years, 6 months, whatever before. How do you get that connection with the actors and with the cast? But it seems like you're able to do that here.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's great. It's really special. Usually there's at least one writer in the VO booth anytime we're recording. And on this project, that was pretty intense, especially as we were closing out because we were running two VO rooms simultaneously with two VO directors so that we could get all the content we needed. And then back in the olden days when we used to go to the performance capture stage, usually both Mary and I were on set all the time. So yeah, I mean, it's super special.
Yeah, we really do get to be hands-on in a way that I don't feel like writers always get to be. We get to work with the actors and they are so phenomenal because they're always pushing, you know, not just what is there, but what, how does my character feel about this? How do they, what's the context behind this? I remember there's one moment in the game, which I can't describe in detail, but it calls back to something in the first game. And I planned to tell Najee that, like, hey, this is what he's thinking about. And he said it before I said it. He was like, oh, it's calling back to this thing, right? And I was like, yep, that scene you did 3.5 years ago. And like, it was great.
So I guess we should actually go back to the beginning because a lot of our listeners may not know how a game works, especially behind the scenes. So could you explain a little bit of what the process is, what it is to be a games writer?
Video games, I'm a big jazz head. And what surprised me about being on this side of video games is how improvisatory it is. You know, these different departments like really have to kind of like play off each other in a deeply connected way. As a writer, you're creating the connective tissue between these wildly different disciplines, right? So like if there's some music or sound design, like you have to be able to have lines to have the character speak to that. You know, if there's a fight, the combat guys, they're doing their job and making the fight exciting. So you have a whole other thread of narrative and commentary that's available to you. Like, what's the character feeling in the moment? But or like, are they acknowledging their feelings in the moment? Maybe they're not. So it's this really gnarly, like many-headed beast that is super exhilarating to be in, but man, it's a lot of everything.
If you want to practice many different types of writing, game writing is a good choice for you because it's, you need the visual storytelling, you know, when you're working on cinematics and different things like that. You need radio drama storytelling for when the player is running around, yet you need to be able to communicate a story. You need to be really good at writing instruction manuals for all of the player go over here lines. So it is, it's this balance of clarity and emotional storytelling that's both tricky, but, you know, really rewarding when you get it right. Like, you need your players to understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, and then the extra layer under that is, why should they care about it? So you have to keep all of that in your head at the same time, and you need to get all the other departments on board as well, because I think it's easy for other departments to understand the player needs to know where they're going and what they're going to do when they get there. What can be harder is why they're doing it and why we should care about it. And that's kind of what you're constantly advocating for.
Yeah, man. I mean, writing for games is like, it's super, super cool. Insomniac is the only studio that I've worked for. So that's, I have kind of a narrow view, but from what I've heard, being a game writer can be very, very different depending on the company you work for. And sometimes all you're doing is writing some dialogue lines. Like, you'll get an email request for X number of lines, you'll write those lines, you'll email them back, and you won't really hear anything. We're really lucky at Insomniac that, you know, that's not the case. Like, we're very enmeshed in the process. And like, it goes way beyond just writing a few lines of dialogue. Like, I think the biggest thing, John Paquette talks about this a lot, the biggest thing for us is kind of being the evangelists for not just story, but for everybody on the team being a storyteller. And like, really feeling comfortable and embracing that idea, because everybody loves story, but some people are intimidated by the idea of labeling themselves as a storyteller. And so a lot of what we do day to day is just encouraging, you know, an environment artist who's working on background propping in Miles's bedroom. Hey man, like, what's your understanding of Miles as a character? What kind of stuff do you think he would have on his shelf? Let's think about, like, what can we say about where he's been and where he's going based on the books that he has on his shelf? And it's really, really wonderful to see people's eyes light up as they start to realize, like, oh man, like, I get to be a part of telling this story too. The decisions that I make about, like, the beveling on the UI is going to convey an idea of who Miles is to players. And I get to be a part of doing that. It's really, it's super cool.
Yeah. Thinking about all of that, how do you start working together as a team on a project like this? Do you divide and conquer? Is it, okay, hey, I want to work on the scene. Let's us sit down and put this together. What is that process like when you are, you know, a team of writers for a project like this?
Yeah. I mean, initially it's everybody get into a room and start talking about ideas, you know, breaking the story, talking about big things, like, what are big themes that we want to explore? What are the characters we're interested in? Or just getting down to, like, oh man, like, I had this really funny idea for a one-off gag where, you know, Miles tries to drink coffee upside down and it doesn't work. Oh, okay, how can we work that in, right? And so there's a lot of the initial process that's just getting in a room, sketching out the big picture, and then getting towards, we call it our macro, where we figure out, okay, what are our golden path missions? What are the core, like, AAA parts of the spine of the story? And breaking it down into those components. And then when you start actually transitioning into production, you assign out those missions. Okay, which writer is going to handle which mission? What's the content that's associated with it? And generally, like, a writer will own everything that occurs inside their particular mission. So all the gameplay VO, all the cinematics that get written, the way that it connects in and out. In Mary's case, she owned a lot of this game, and she had one of the more important chunks, which was our Harlem side quest that had a number of different characters. And Mary, it would be awesome if you wanted to dive into what that was like architecting that.
Yeah, so that was a really fascinating challenge, because Miles Morales is my first AAA game and my first open world game. And one of the major goals on this game was to improve our open world and how it felt. And so they said, here you go, here's a big chunk of side content. And I was like, cool, I've never done side content, really excited. So my first idea was to root it all in characters. You know, I've been writing games for a few years now, and across the board, players tend to forget quests that is just do thing, find thing, you know, fetch thing. But they tend to remember quests that someone asks them for help or someone asks them to do something. You know, they really fall in love with characters. So I brainstormed a bunch of characters, and then it was me and the designer, Charlie Crucci, working really closely together, not just on the characters, but what they needed and how we could make that fun and how we could keep it fast paced. And the thing that was really challenging about that is when you're working on side content, you don't have as many resources to make it cool. You know, you don't have cinematics so much. You don't have everybody in the company is working on it because it's a main story mission. It was just the two of us for a lot of it. But that was also a good challenge because we could pivot really quickly. If we put in a chase sequence and it was boring, we cut it. You know, we were able to chase the fun. And I think we made something really special. We're both really proud of it. The trickiest thing about it was, well, when is the player doing this? Is Miles at this point in his journey or is he at this point in his journey? And so we had to put in a lot of conditional dialogue based on where we were in Miles' story and, like, you know, how famous is he? Do people expect Peter when he shows up? Just a lot of little questions like that.
Just for clarity, would you say what cinematics are?
Oh, yeah. Cinematic is just, it's an in-game scene where the player isn't playing it. They're watching it. Usually, you know, they last like about 2 minutes to a minute. They're not very long, but those are just moments where the player isn't playing. They're watching a really beautifully done scene.
Mary had, because that side content went through a lot of iteration as the main story, the Golden Path, was evolving. Some of the themes and ideas and characters that had originally been a part of the quests started to conflict with the Golden Path. And so, like, the Golden Path is the 800-pound gorilla that, like, when it wants something, it gets it, and everybody else has to accommodate. And I just think the end result of these quests is so special because they feel so unique. They do exactly what Mary's talking about. They elevate the feeling of the open world. They give Miles' neighborhood of Harlem a real sense of personal character with these individuals you meet. And, you know, one of our themes in the game is that Miles recently moved from Brooklyn to Harlem. And so he's kind of learning to fall in love with this new place, these new people. And I think that that gets expressed with so much heart and emotion in this side content. I'm really excited for people to play it.
It was pretty personal for me to get to work on it. The first place I moved after college when I left my home state of Indiana, the first place I lived was Harlem. And me and Evan texted many times about that.
Yeah.
I know, Evan, you're a New York kid too.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was really meaningful to me about getting to work on this project, because I was a kid like Miles, you know, 15, 16, 17, running around the city and falling in love with its rhythms and the people and the density and the rush of adrenaline and information. That's one thing that I think really motivated me to try and give all my experiences and help shape the story and the feel of this game with that insight. I lived in Harlem too, and Harlem is just such this amazingly meaningful neighborhood in New York City. Like, there's so much history there. There's so much cultural pride and style and everything. And that's just the stuff we tried to get across, you know? Like, part of the game is watching Miles and helping Miles, like, get attuned to that vibe of his new neighborhood.
Yeah, Evan was really instrumental in pushing us constantly. Like, Harlem needs to have its own voice and character, right? So not just, like, these side quests, the specific people that you meet. When you're swinging through, when you're walking through Harlem, the neighborhood needs to react to Miles. Miles needs to react to the neighborhood. And that needs to change over the course of the game. So we actually did a lot of work in plussing up what we call our emergent VO system. So voiceover lines that are played dynamically, emergently, as the player is going through, and it responds in different ways depending on what the player has done at different points. So we called it, I think the acronym was the SHS, the Spanish Harlem system, that was like just all these lines from people in Harlem and then from Miles that would trigger dynamically depending on what kind of food stand are you next to, what street are you on, how far in the Golden Path have you gone, what kind of side content have you done. And it's the kind of, like, small little things that maybe not every player is going to notice, but it's the little details that for the two or three people who do find it, they're going to fall in love with it. And it's going to be one of the things that they say, like, oh, that's my favorite part of the game. And everyone should know that that's because of Evan, you know, that they love that part of the game.
That's so true. There were definitely weeks early on where I was working on this open world side content, and you know, in the beginning, it didn't get as much love as we were saying because everybody was wrestling the main story gorilla. But like every week, I'm sending outlines or scripts to Evan, and I was like, you know, how's this? Is that right? And all of your ideas and your notes were like, this is how it can be cool, though. And it made it so much better.
Well, I mean, you know, the feeling that I wanted to try and capture was that, like, one of the best things about living in New York City is, like, you constantly get to eavesdrop on people, right? Like, and they're eavesdropping on you. They're all in your business because, you know, it's so tightly packed. So if a superhero comes swinging through your neighborhood, New Yorkers are going to have something to say about that. And that's not a new idea, but we wanted to drill down and find the specificity that felt perfect for Harlem and perfect for Miles in the game.
I know we don't want to like spoil the whole game, but we got to talk about some characters. We got to, you know, we got to get the sweet juice for the Twim fans.
To me, one of the biggest opportunities and one of the things I feel like is so great about this game is what we're trying to do at Rio with Miles's mom. She's really a central character in this story. Based on the events of the last game, she and Miles, we want to communicate the idea that they've worked through some grief and they're trying to rebuild their lives in the aftermath of losing somebody super important to them. This game happens a year after the events of the last one, of the Peter Parker game, and Jeff Davis, Miles' dad, has passed away. He died during the events of the game, and that's what prompts the move to Harlem. And Rio is now a single parent, and she has to figure out how to keep Miles' world together, and this move to Harlem is part of it. But she also, this is her returning to a neighborhood she grew up in and finding it in the midst of great change. And she steps up to try and advocate for the people who live there. She's running for office. And that's its own kind of heroism, you know? Like, that's its own kind of sacrifice. And the conversations that she has with Miles are some of my favorite ones in the game. So I'm really proud of what's happening with her.
Yeah, painting off that, I feel like one of the strengths of this franchise, the start in the first game, so all of the props to that writing team, is that they're many different types of heroism. And it's not about the abilities you have, it's about how you use the abilities you have. And I think we continued that in Miles because, you know, Miles has this new suite of abilities, but that's not what made him a hero. He was already heroic in the first game before the spider bit him. And then he now has these new powers to contend with and still wants to be heroic. Rio, you know, some of her skills are in public speaking and reaching out to her community. And, you know, how is she going to use those abilities to be heroic? And she does throughout the story. And then another character I know we've announced, so I can talk about him, Genki Lee, is also quite heroic. And again, he's not swinging from the skyscrapers, but he has things he can contribute. And he does so. And he does so without asking for anything in return. So I think that's a really hopeful message of the game, is that we all can contribute in some way to making the world a little better and a little brighter.
I think no character has made the world better or brighter than Spider-Man the cat. And I need to know everything about Spider-Man the cat.
I was the person who early on was very annoyingly and aggravatingly repeating, we need to have a literal save the cat mission. Like, let's have a literal save the cat mission. Evan, I think, also was initially like, yo, we need to have a bodega cat. Like, we're not doing a story set in New York, especially up in Harlem, that doesn't feature a bodega cat. We got to see a bodega cat. But then after that, it's like Gavin, our lead character artist, like dove in and figured out, okay, well, can we get a cat? How do we model a cat? How do we animate the cat? Oh man, fur simulation, I don't know about fur. It was one of those elements that like the cat for a little while was a small cohort of us that were like, hey, this is going to be cool. People are going to like this. But, you know, doing a quadruped, animating fur, those are tough things to do, right? But then once it got into the game, there's a mission that focuses on rescuing this cat named Spider-Man. Different team members started to get really excited and it grew from there. And like, you know, we had an animator who was like, oh, we could do X, Y, and Z with the cat. We had a sound person who was like, oh, I'm going to go home, I'm going to record my two cats and we're going to use that anytime we need cat noises, right? Like, our UI people got super excited about like, oh, we're going to make stickers for Spider-Man the cat in photo mode. And it just kind of like propagates out from there. One of the things I always say about Insomniac that I love about working here is that you are surrounded by so many creative people who are so dedicated to doing the best work of their careers. And like, they'll see these opportunities and they'll just run with it and produce some of the most amazing content. So yeah, Spider-Man the Cat, super excited for everybody to meet Spider-Man the Cat.
If I can piggyback on something that both Ben and Mary was saying about heroism here, I think we can take for granted, based on the premise of the game and the character that we're making the game about, that Miles is heroic, right? Like, we can take that as a given. But I'd say the big journey of the game for Miles is that, like, he can't be heroic in the same way that Pete can. He has a different personality, like a different background. The stakes are different for him. And really, this is kind of like his first day on the job. So, like, it's finding about, okay, how do I be Spider-Man? Me, this Black and Puerto Rican kid, like, from Brooklyn and now lives in a new neighborhood. Like, how do I juggle all of that and still, like, be a hero in a way that feels true to myself? And that was a big question.
Yeah, I think the marketing campaign is pretty perfect. You know, the be yourself, that's it, right? That's, and I think that comes from the dev team too. When you're following up one of the most successful games of 2018, one of the best Spider-Man games ever made, you go, wow, that was phenomenal. But this is not that game. So, you know, it's like, what is different about this game? Like, why does it matter on its own? And I think that's the journey that Miles is going through. And it's certainly the journey the dev team went through.
Totally. And just to give credit where it's due, our actress who played Rio, Jackie Pinal, and the actor who played Genki, Griffin Puatu, they are so responsible for how much I think players are going to love these characters. Our cast is just, I cannot say enough good things about them and the heart and emotion and commitment that they brought to these scenes. Like, you know, the scenes Evan is talking about with Miles and Rio having mother-son discussions. Najee showed up to play those days. Jackie showed up to play. And like, frequently people were walking away from set, you know, mopping their eyes because of how emotional Jackie in particular was in bringing a lot of her own life experience as a mother into these scenes with Miles. Just really, really gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, every day we shot with Jackie, I ended up calling my mom on the way home every single time. She like brought it.
I can't wait. I can't wait to really dig in. And I know our listeners are very excited to play Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales, on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. Thank you, everybody, for being on
Thank you.
Look, we didn't spoil damn near anything. Well done, all of you. Great job.
Okay, that interview was awesome. I'm all about learning the ins and outs, or the, you know, I should say the backstage moments of video games and entertainment. And so to hear how things were being written, how people were put together, how the story was put together, how that crew got together, that's pretty cool. So this was good. Well done, guys. Well done.
Also, be sure to go play that game on PlayStation platforms.
Yes! If you've got a PlayStation 5 and you want to give it to me, please, just, you know, you can DM me on Twitter, @AgentM. I'm happy to take your PlayStation 5, and we'll go from there.
And if you have a second one, you can DM me at Lorraine Sink. I'll also take one.
And if you have, you know, a third, you know, you could just DM me at James and Michael Hart on Twitter. We are all so happy to take these things off of you. It's great.
Yes. Yeah. We're happy to lessen the burden of you having a next generation console. I'll get one someday, some point.
I know.
It'll be great.
I said the same thing. I said, I'm going to wait. I'll get one. I'll wait.
All right. So for next week, let's talk about our question of the week. We're going to be a little bit vague here, but we have a very big show, big stuff happening over the next week. Some cool stuff that'll be announced. Now, our question of the week is, who do you want us to talk with on future episodes of This Week in Marvel? You can tweet your answers using hashtag This Week in Marvel, email them to twimpodcast@marvel.com, or send a message to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thisweekinmarvel.
Also, guys, listen, because next week's show is such a big show, I'm curious, we're curious, what have been some of your favorite moments of This Week in Marvel over the past year? We know this year's been crazy. We know this year's been so different, but you have consistently listened to the show. So what have been some of your favorite moments? Let us know. We would love to hear.
Yeah, but you know what? We have a big show this week, too.
We do.
We have a secret surprise.
We have a special guest.
Oh, my goodness.
Wah, 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 wah. It's Percy of Berlin.
Yeah. Our powerful producer, Persia, in her first, and now to be last, appearance on This Week in Marvel, is here. Persia, say hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Actually, wait a minute. You've been on the show once before.
I didn't want to lie. I did one time have to co-host the show.
Yes, you did.
That's amazing.
That's right.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. If people really want to hunt for it, they're very much free to. But I did co-host the show with Ryan once. It was a very dire week. And I was like, I can do it, guys. Let me at him.
Yeah, it's our mandate to never miss a week. And Persia knocked it out of the park and did great. Persia, why are you on the show this week?
I have bad news. I'm leaving Marvel. I won't be producing TWIM anymore. But I wanted to say hi to all the listeners and thank you so much. You know, we, all four of us, five of us, including Zachary and our greater audio team, do a lot of work for this show, and we love to hear from you guys, and we just, you know, want to know that you guys are enjoying it.
You know, we know that Persia is a straight up treasure. She's been really important to our show over the last few years, or however long. How long have you been here?
Two and a half.
Over 2.5 years. Yeah, yeah. I started May 2018.
Wow.
So yes, multiple years. So. Specifically, what have been some of your favorite things about working on the show, and more specifically with me?
So, yeah, if people are big TWIM fans, they'll know that since I've been on the show, a lot of things have changed, actually. TWIM has had a couple of hosts, and every iteration has been great. But this trifecta is really a joy to have all together. And like you guys say all the time, like, it's so nice to have just sort of our weekly scheduled, like, get together, essentially. You know, we riff like for 30 minutes before we ever start recording.
Yeah, there was a lot of Philadelphia talk before we got into things today.
All Philly.
Big gritty
all
action, Philly. Which was great. Yeah.
In celebration of me. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, you're from Philly. Percy, a favorite Marvel character?
Favorite Marvel character? I have to say, for a long time, I was really into Nightcrawler. I just think he was like all the things I wanted to be as a kid, which is like gymnastic. I'm like not Christian at all.
I was about to say, like, super Christian, religious.
Super, all the things I wanted to be, which were like German, Catholic.
Blue.
Literally nothing to do with Persia, but all right.
But everything.
No, I just really wanted to be able to like do a flip in the air.
Beast also does flips. You could have been Beast.
He's not life enough for me.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Ooh, life.
Yes,
like
not
that.
Life. I like that.
Yeah, very good.
But I did, I have to give kudos to Lorraine also. I've been really coming around on She-Hulk as I sort of come into myself. I'm no longer the boyish, acrobatic young man I was.
I've really enjoyed watching you enjoy She-Hulk. When I started recommending books, you're like, oh, I think this might be like my energy. I was like, yeah, I've converted someone.
And I just to be clear, what an audio producer does, if people are interested. So an audio producer, a lot of times will do research, will do scheduling, will deal with hosts, will deal with guests, and they will record. They will be an audio engineer. They will edit. They will mix. They will publish the episode. You know, it's really like nuts to bolts for an audio producer. So me and Zachary, who is continuing with you guys on.
Your son.
My son. My legacy lives on through him. You know, like, touch every part of the show. And we, of course, want to help you guys be like the best face and the best voice that you can be for it.
For our many listeners who actually started listening or went back to the beginning to start, you know, listening to the show, I was the producer at the beginning because, like, I just wanted to make a podcast. So I was the one editing. I was the one putting it all together. And the reason that the show has gotten better is because we have good producers like Persia and Zachary. So thank you, lucky stars. We have good audio producers.
I made a list of some things that I like about Persia that I just wanted to share.
This is big Lorraine vibes right here.
This is good.
This is like like a very intense Lorraine vibe. I love that Persia has like a very grounded presence with everyone, which I think makes her a very magnetic human being. But one of my favorite things is when Persia like lets down her professional lady vibe and gets real shy. It's one of the things that I just love about her is that under her tough exterior, there's like a really kind, sweet human being. Another thing I just like one night, I had Persia and a bunch of the ladies from Marvel over at my house to have some adult juice. And just like listening to Persia tell stories is wonderful because I'm so used to talking at Persia constantly, and just like having a chance to hear her talk about herself is truly just delightful. I love that she cannot wear a sweater right to save her goddamn life. Mm-hmm. Persia always wears like one arm in her sweater and like one wrapped around her neck for no reason. Yep. But I guess she's looking for the perfect climate. And then and my last thing on the list is just that she's so, so talented. That's it. Love you, Persia.
Yeah. Thank you, Persia.
Yeah, Ryan, what do you have prepared for today?
Nothing. Nothing.
And that is also Big Ryan.
Yes. I prepare like nobody's business. Get out of here with that action.
Oh, no, I just meant that you're not going to share love.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm all out of love.
Yo, listen, it's like PPP, Persia Verlin on Twim. We just want to let you know, girl, that you will always win. Now, we understand you're leaving Marvel and going on to a new life, but just let everybody know it's always going to be right. You are strong. That's why I'm making up this song. This freestyle rap is for you, girl. Got it going on. And I just want to thank you for letting me back into the office, making me feel all cool. And yo, every time I look at you, it's like cool new school but old school. And me, of course, now Ryan doesn't want to give you that love, but he knows deep down there is no one above. Now, Zach is the man. Of course, he's the son. And you've given him the mic, and of course, he will run. But for Persia, PPP, the producer, the girl, the woman, the awesome, the lady, the one, the only. We just want to let you know we will love you forever and only. And so go do your thing. Go out into life. Go make it right and go make it right. Just one more time, you're going to shine so bright. Even though you're not with Marvel, girl, you're going to be all right.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you.
Well done.
I'm so glad I can update my resume.
Yeah, to put a little link in there, freestyle rap about me here.
That was Freestyle Love Supreme. Thank you.
Most deaf girl.
Well done.
Thank you so much.
Are you going to stick around for our community section or are you leaving?
I'm going to let you guys go. I know the community wants to hear from you.
Fine.
You should have the last word, Persia. What do you want to say in closing?
I just want to say keep listening, true believers.
Aw, we love you, Persia.
All right. With that said, now let's get into the rest of our community section, starting with Karis Pollard at A. Karis Pollard, saying her This Week in Marvel pick of the week goes to Guardians of the Galaxy by Al Ewing, Marcio Takara, and Federico Blee, mostly for showing that Rocket isn't just a mouth or a trash panda. He's genuinely smart and would make a great private investigator. The different tone to usual works, and the art is really evocative with some great brush effects, and she included some images from the most recent Guardians of the Galaxy, which rules. It is a murder mystery with Rocket as the one solving the case, and it's really, really good.
Yeah.
From Jeff Sampson on Facebook, I just want to take a moment to say thanks to Lorraine for the reading ideas. I've been tearing through Deadpool the Gauntlet and thoroughly enjoying it.
Yay!
Just now listened to episode number 471 and wanted to clarify, I am 41 and have been watching Howard the Duck since I was 7 or 8 and have probably seen it 100 times, but I always take flack from people because I love it. Hence the love hate. You guys are cool and I think I'm officially a fan.
Yes, yes, yes. This email is like just for me. Reading some Deadpool and some Sheikla stories, watching Howard the Duck. This is a perfect weekend for me.
Yeah.
Howard the Duck movie. Gosh, dog it.
And Jeff, so if you like Deadpool the Gauntlet, that era of Deadpool, there's my favorite Deadpool story of all time is called Deadpool the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and it will break you. We got another Facebook message in here from Benny Dales. Benny says, hiya, you guys. Just wanted to message and say that I finally got caught back up and want to say that when I listened to the podcast where you all had mentioned my message was like one of the coolest things ever. Made my week for sure. And if any of you watch Twitch, I stream on Twitch Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern. Would be cool to have you all tune in and chat a minute. And Benny's Twitch name is BD3Gaming13 for any of our Twimaniacs who like to watch Twitch. I don't get to watch a lot of Twitch, especially during that time period, because I have like a 2-hour window after the baby goes to sleep before I pass out to watch something with my wife or play a video game, but I will try to catch you in there, Benny.
Yeah. Next up, we have Dan Everett at DanEv1985 saying, hearing Lorraine talk about the Great British Bake Off on This Week of Marvel is the greatest thing and never was a truer word spoken. Thank you so much for supporting me on all things British. Everyone and the internet.
That is awesome.
Oh, speaking of cool reality show and making stuff, James, you were able to finally announce a new project of yours.
Yes. I got a brand new project coming on HGTV starting November 27th at 9 p.m. I am the host of a brand new competition show called Biggest Little Christmas Showdown, which is basically these amazing miniaturists. That's right, miniaturists. They make these miniature dollhouses, but these bad boys are not your Barbie dollhouse. These things look like mansions and real houses. These people are amazing artists. And we have a 4-episode series, and Genevieve Gorder is one of our judges, as well as June Klinklanks and Dave Asling. You have seen his work in The Mandalorian. The boy has put together some amazing things. So trust me, this show is going to be great. I get to host HGTV. It's a wonderful Christmas time celebration show competition. You're going to have a ball. Trust me. Check it out, please.
Yeah. That's Black Friday, right? That's the Friday after Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I might have to live tweet that. I'm not going to be doing anything or going anywhere. Getting into that.
I love miniatures, especially, James, you got to then pitch them on a sequel where people make miniatures for kaiju movies. And then you and me get in kaiju costumes and we destroy them.
Yes. Okay. I will talk
Wait,
to
Wait, I want a kaiju costume
Lorraine,
too.
You'll have to be in like a flying kaiju costume.
That's what I want. Yes. I want to be Mothra.
Yes, I will talk to them. I think people would love to see, like, and you know, whatever you step on, you get points for. You know, people can vote. It'd be great.
Yes.
Awesome show.
Also, I want to be a producer on that show just for helping come up with the idea and get a lot of money. Great. That
you
sounds
got totally
perfect.
Perfect. Done.
Yeah. Let's wrap this bad boy up. This episode of This Week in Marvel is produced by Persia Verlin, Zachary Goldberg, Lorraine Sink, and Ryan Knobos.
Our audio development manager is Brad Barton.
Jill Duboff is our director of audio.
And special thanks to Persia Verlin for everything that she's been doing for us for the past 2 years. We're going to miss you so much, and thank you for all you've done for us.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
And I'm James.
And this is Mark.
Your universe.